The Idiot Players are very pleased to bring you what we intend to be a series of conversations with important thinkers and beers and doers. The Idiot Players podcast aims to explore art, creativity, and expression. If there is an elephant standing in the dark, as the Sufi story goes, we want to do more than grope and theorize. We invite conversations with people who aim from the heart to make practical the far-reaching. Welcome to the Idiot Players podcast. In this episode, you will be glad to listen to Dr. Nevit Egan. Dr. Egan is the man who has translated into English the 44,000 verses of the Dabani Kabir from the poet and Sufi Jalaluddin Rumi. These divan are currently widely available as a 22-volume set or as individual volumes. A new collection of Rumi's Rubai will be available in the spring of 2012, and it will include special recordings of selected poems read by Coleman Barks and recorded in the Mevlana Mausoleum in Konya, Turkey. Dr. Egan trained and worked as a surgeon in his professional life. He now works solely to bring Rumi's works and teaching to a wide audience. He says, "Understanding the message of love in Rumi is our last hope to avoid nuclear winter." Please go to the website for the Society for Understanding Mevlana at sfumevlana.org for more information about Dr. Egan's work. You'll find an excellent set of posts on many topics. The content of the conversation is excellent, as Dr. Egan covers many topics ranging from the Itlaq path of Sufism that he was initiated into by Hasan Shushud to aspects of Rumi's life. I cannot imagine that there is anyone better qualified at this time to speak to these topics. I apologize for the recorded quality of the first 12 minutes or so of Dr. Egan's conversation. The quality does improve when we switch to a landline. In any case, the conversation requires a quality of careful listening that the Idiot Players audience is well capable of, I believe. I have provided a summary of topics covered in the show, so that you can follow along as the conversation develops. As usual, the introductory music and closing music are excerpts from the Idiot Players. As well, in this podcast, I have included a taksim played on the guitar by your host and simply entitled Taksim Number 3. Well, it seems I've lost the donation button on the idiotplayers.org site temporarily. But if you would like to donate to the work of idiotplayers.org, you can do so through PayPal directly by addressing your donation to Gregory, G-R-E-G-O-R-Y, at idiotplayers.org. Your donations are much appreciated. If there is anyone out there with WordPress experience who would like to contribute a bit of expertise, that would be most welcome also. Thanks to all of you for getting the word out about the high-quality conversations that we have been posting this year, and I encourage everyone to post something of their own in the way of a comment or reflection to the blog. Let me know that you're out there listening. The conversation was originally recorded on December 23, 2011, and is being published on December 28, 2011. I have presented the conversation as one complete podcast, and the running time is approximately 1.5 hours. Enjoy. Well, Dr. Nevit Ergen, welcome, a warm welcome to the Idiot Players podcast. We're so delighted that you could join us today. I have this little bit of a biography that you sent along. It's one line. It says, Nevit Ergen found the world in 1928 and is still trying to get rid of it through the Itlock Way. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, I read this little bit more. If you don't mind, I'll read it for you.
Okay, thank you.
By the way, my last name is Ergen.
Ergen.
I'm one of them who become prey to Marana 50 years ago. I found this word in 1928. I have been trying to get rid of it since then. Before this word got rid of me. If that didn't come to a human, we would be reasonably happy following the voice of freedom. But that comes making all the road dead end. That's why I have been walking on different path than myself. So, one subject which has been very much ignored by the people is that. That is the only truth, only absolute truth in the world. Everything else is very relative. Everybody dies sooner or later.
Yeah.
And alone. Why we were born, if we were going to die, that's another question. But eventually everything becomes flat, rich, poor, white, red, black, famous or not, and men and women, children, they're all going to die. And before we start living life, we have to solve that problem once and for all. What is that before actual chronological death? That has been the question occupying my mind and my soul all the time. How can you die before your actual death then become dead in me?
You're referring to the Sufi saying, die before you die.
Yes, yes. That's the main thing. If we spend so many years having a degree in life, eventually we'll give up and die. If we spend all those years fighting for independence or for national pride, and we're all going to die and we'll forget. This world has been witnessed so many wars and so many struggles. Eventually end up for nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we spend life before we settle this issue first? Dying before death will free us from, will give us a different perspective. Look at the life. Live the life. If we know that we're all going to die, we don't have to fight. we'll have to wait. Either our adversary will die or we will die. Before or after, anyway. And the issue is going to be solved by itself. So here or not, this is a practical thing in life. I feel like we should really pay a little bit more attention. Rather than sweeping the dead issue under the carpet and everybody thinks somebody else is dead, but their own not. Instead of doing that, ignoring that, we should really get involved with it.
Hmm. Well, we see that we have this problem, as it were. We see around us that we're all going to die. Everyone is dying. The world is passing away. But somehow, in what you said, I heard also, we pretend that that isn't going to happen to us, necessarily. And this problem of perception that we have, well, it's all happening to everyone else, but not necessarily to me. Is this the root of the problem in terms of the self?
Absolutely. You hit the right spot.
Okay.
Perception is where we are born with the perception, human perception, causing us all kind of troubles. Being and becoming, and creations, after creations, creators, and our relation with the Creator puts us in immense trouble.
Is it trouble because it is only a bunch of ideas floating around in our head that have no reality?
Right. Since there are others, we are not anymore one anymore. We are multiplied. Since we know good and bad, that's where the trouble starts. The heart that hasn't learned the ecstasy will always stay under the feet.
The heart that has not learned the ecstasy?
Ecstasy.
Yep.
Always stays under the feet, you see.
Okay.
How can I say that?
And under the feet, meaning that it will be trampled on. It's not...
Sure. This is what we are doing every day, every night. Our main trouble, you say, you display the nothingness as something. You show the dust by the wind. Again, Maulana says, the world is a magnificent lie.
The world is a magnificent lie, yeah.
The universe is a magnificent waste, he says. Creation has never taken place. We have no evidence of that. Our existence is the source of our main problems. Why? Because we don't belong to the existing world. Our essence is in nowhere, nothingness. And the existence always like a tight shoes, squeezes and hurts our feet of our soul all the time. We try to take this out at night, at sleep, then we do have a different perception in sleep without the time and space limitation. Without that, we cannot endure time and space boundary during the day. If you deprive somebody from sleep, his health will deteriorate so much, he won't be able to survive after a couple of weeks.
We are in at least two states. One being that we're walking around in our body and conducting our business, etc. And the other being that in sleep, we're freed of these restrictions and we're traveling, as it were, into a different realm, a different world.
Yeah.
But also, you're saying that there seems to be a bit of a conspiracy. This existence is a bit of a conspiracy. It's not based on reality.
We are fooled by the God having this kind of perception. But perception itself is another topic to talk about it.
Yep.
Abstract concept that manifests infinite layers of limited awareness of totality. If we equalize everything to perception rather than evolution or creations, we would be much better off.
Okay. Dr. Ergen, can I just pause for a moment? I would really like to try. I'm sorry to stop right now. Can I phone you through Skype? Can I phone you on the telephone?
Sure.
We were just speaking about opening up the theme of perception. Well, we started with the theme of perception, and we talked about two states, this so-called waking state, moving around in the world of bodies, and this sleeping state, moving around perhaps in the world of spirits. And you were speaking of the nature of perception. Please continue.
I'll give you example. Like my hand has a shadow. The shadow is the behavior of ourselves. But the hand is the essence. Since man's behavior is a shadow of his essence, all attempt to change the direction of the shadow is illusionary.
Right.
All education, all behavioral therapy are illusionary. Hmm. Unless we change our essence, we're not be different than we are. And as a matter of fact, mankind is in deep coma of existence, not knowing there is no physical universe. Reality is nothing but product of perception. We are the children of perception, neither from evolution nor Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve is the funniest story had been invented.
Well, please tell us more, because I've been thinking a lot about this Adam and Eve story. Can you take us into that story a bit?
Right. It comes from the Sumerians.
Yes.
About 2,000 some years before BC.
Yes.
Sumerian had Adam, Garden of Adam, somehow in Mesopotamia.
Yes.
And then Adam came in nowhere and had a wife before the Eve, as a matter of fact, another woman before the Eve.
Okay.
And somehow he didn't get along with that. So God created Eve out of Adam's rib. And still, demon is not around. What is around is snake, serpent.
Yep.
Serpent is the old god of Sumerian.
Okay.
When the religion changed, all the gods in the previous religion become bad guy.
Okay.
So Serpent sent the Eve to eat the fruit and become sinner right at that time. I mean, you have to be kidding to believe in that. Gilgamesh believed that. He looked for immortality and finding the Garden of Eden. Marco Polo went to the east to try to find the Garden of Eden. And there is all the effort and blame for that original sin. I think...
Is the whole... Is what you're telling us that the whole idea of original sin is itself problematic, a joke?
Oh, it's a great joke. And how can people believe that? Down to me. And according to this, Garden Eden, the whole words were created about 5000 BC. Well, I think they have the big flood.
Yeah.
And they took the origin of the universe from that flood. That's most likely... Black Sea was a lake when the 7000 BC, when the climate changed, all the ice is melted, the Mediterranean raised and wrecked the Dardanelles and Bosphorus and become, Black Sea become sea, and the result of that, there was a lot of rain and a lot of turmoil.
Yep.
And all the Adam and Eve and Adam's Noah's Ark were all product of this catastrophe. And every prophet copied from each other. This went up to Quran. Quran mentions about the Adam and Eve too.
Yes. But why, okay, the picture that you're painting, some historical events actually occurring, climate change, the Black Sea, which was previously a lake, is inundated, and things change. The story of Adam and Eve, why then does it appear in the holy books of the tradition of Judaism, Christianity, Islam? What?
Well, the Jews had stayed in Babylon for many, many years. You remember Darius saved them and protect them. And during that staying residency in Babylon, I believe they pick up that story.
So then during the Babylonian captivity?
Yes. Many other stories came from Sumerian origin. And we have no evidence actually Abraham lived and have old age with the two wives and two children and everything. Sir?
Yes.
We are slave of that kind of fable.
Okay.
Tales. Mankind is in deep coma for existence. not knowing there is no physical universe, reality is nothing but the product of his perception. What we are common, we have a human perception. And the perception, infinite layers of limited awareness, of totality, from the molecules, the atoms and particles, animals and plants, we inherit them all.
Yes.
We reach the perception, we have all of those perceptions in our body. But we don't think perception ends there.
So we have a collection of stories, an inheritance of the body. But inside of that, or outside of it, or beyond it somehow, more important than that inheritance is the center of our awareness, which is a living substance. Many people become trapped in the story. The story of Adam and Eve, the story of Abraham, the story of this prophet or that prophet.
Well, evolution continues in some way, somehow, we're not aware about it. But the stories one time deal already happened in the past. But if you think we are the children of our perception, we have dynamism of changing this perception. This is where we come to.
Okay, good. One of the papers that you sent, since we are the children of our perception, more so than Adam and Eve, it is only natural to look for salvation by changing perception.
Right.
We will never see the true nature of this cosmic illusion, fiction of the mind and memory, this magnificent lie, which we call life, unless we die with the death of annihilation.
Right.
Well, that's saying a lot.
Annihilation. Changing of perception are accessible only by direct experiences. They are reached by gradual self-annihilation. The either abstraction could be intellectual, bookish pursuits, or bodily obstruction, changing your eating and drink and breathing habit, and going through a lot of suffering. This is chronic distress syndrome, called. I have done this last 12 years in my life. Every single day, I face it. I came in, I met Mr. Shishut, 1955. I came to Canada, Ottawa first, and then United States. I faced all those years where I was a doctor, intern, resident, up to 1960-something. Every single day. And sometimes I started Wednesday, I didn't breakfast until Saturday. And I hold my breath 2-3 minutes. What is life between life and death? Death doesn't eat, doesn't breathe. By changing the breathing and eating habits, one can changes perception. This has been known for centuries, thousands of years in East. In West, this goes on the modification in Catholic Church.
Now, when people hear, people in the audience are hearing that you have fasted so intensively over a number of years,
yes,
they will say, perhaps, that's impossible for me. What is this man talking about that sounds so strange?
Oh, too bad. There will be a time where it will be, this will be a need for him too. We have unlimited opportunities. If not this time, it will be next time. This particular person will born, will die, will go on the mythology, either hell or heaven, and he will put his head in this pillow and sleep nicely during the lifetime, and when it's over, it's over. We don't sleep that way. This is not his time. We have no intention to recruit anybody. As a matter of fact, Bonten doesn't go to Thursday. Thursday usually goes to Bonten.
Okay. So you're the Society for Understanding Mevlana is an organization. It's not you're not looking to recruit people to undertake this journey.
Not at all, sir. Mm-hmm. Not at all. We have no membership, no hierarchy, no dress code, nothing in that sort. And we believe God is our essence, is not our creator. As a matter of fact, we create the God. God didn't create us. We all respect every religion, is a good advice, but religion, unfortunately, have not helped mankind, created more trouble than any help.
Hmm. Now, in saying that we are not created.
Right.
No doubt that will get you in trouble with some people too.
All right. So what?
Yeah.
There is no evidence of any creation. I mean, after the Big Bang Theory, 13-some billion years ago, that particular explosion, what was just 1 second before that? It doesn't explain one thing. And the existence of particles still is in the air. And more particles, because any time when you look at the essence of anything, you go in nothing, absence, nothing. So, I guarantee you that Higgs bosons is a glue for putting them together, atoms, molecules, as a body, is the product of our perception, because we create in this perception, we create time and space, and we see everything as a body. But before we go through this perceptual changes, you don't see body anymore. You see spirit.
Let me just recap what you said, because I believe it's so important to at least get some kind of a picture of what you're saying. You started by saying the Higgs boson, the so-called God particle, is itself, although people might look to it to be answering deep questions about the nature of reality, people may say that. Scientists with many degrees and lots of machinery and money are trying to establish the reality of this particle, but the truth of it is that it is a product of our perception. It's what we are wanting to see in that situation.
Right. If you wait for a little while, you're going to find out. As a matter of fact, be full of the love rather than learn man and science. Be a dirt on this road, then a moon in the sky. Embrace good and bad, young and old, walk on the same way. Be a pawn, vizier, and king later on. Let's talk a little bit about Mevlana.
Please, you were reading some Mevlana, please.
Yes.
Tell us about this ocean.
Mevlana is a simple and pious man, a mystic and more. Mevlana is a poet, a scholar, and beyond both. Mevlana is a Muslim, Christian, and Jew, yet beyond all. Mevlana is a Persian, Turk, Afghan, beyond all the nationalities. Mevlana is not visible dust, but unseen wind. He is not the slave of existence, but the sultan of Athens. This is where Mevlana to me. Everyone talks about Mevlana is Persian, or Turk, or Afghan. It's telling the truth to some extent, but not all. Mevlana is a good poet. He did write the best poetry in 13th century Farsi.
Mm-hmm.
But I trusted every one of those ghazals and rubais, 1,736 quatrains and 44,000 verses of Ghazal and from Turkish.
It's an extraordinary, I hesitate to say achievement because I don't want to, anyway, I'm astounded by it. It's a life's work for you to have done that, in addition to your doctor duties as a doctor.
I am Canadian. As you know, FRCS is the highest degree in medicine and surgery, at least. I passed through FRCS 1965, I believe. Anyway.
The large body of poetry that you translated from, how do I pronounce the man's name, Golpinarli?
Yes. He was, I met him in 1950s. He used to come Mr. Shush's place. And his wife used to tell me, he says, son, tell him, don't come in here so drunk, he falls asleep. And the people in Konya didn't know he drink at all. But I met him. I met Frizanfer as well.
Who was that, sorry?
Frizanfer is a scholar from Tehran University. And he came in, I remember, in the 50s with a camera hanging on his neck. He pictured everything at that time. We didn't have photocopy machine or computer or anything. He pictured the one. I have the replica of it in the Konya Museum. And many other divans in different libraries and museums, and he published Divan e Shams in 1958 or 59 in Tehran. That's the print edition of Divan.
And that is in the Farsi?
Yes.
Okay.
Everybody whom you know Farsi, Iranian, knows about this divan. As you know, the divan, we have the replica. This is a 14th century divan, handwritten. When the Mongols left Anatolia, they left the generals to run the country. They settled down Ilkhanid kingdom in Persia, and they ran the Anatolia with the general. The one general came down to Uzbek general, as a matter of fact. So Konya didn't like the grandson's son of Mevlana. In Konya Museum, of not naturally become museum later on after Atatürk. He was Mevlevi Tekke.
Okay.
Convent. And he didn't like the guy. He was, he had a big mustache and he drank wine. He says, are you Mevlevi or are you Sipahi? So he wanted to get rid of him, and he sent him Pontus in northern Anatolia, in the Greek kingdom, as an emissary. He's an emissary. And this part is from Eflaki, Ahmed Eflaki.
Right.
Then I could rely on him. Last chapter. And he insisted having him to go there. So his grandson's brother locked the door in Konya convent and picked up all the valuable books, went up to Karavan, went up to Erzincan. Governor of Erzincan liked it to be one. At that time, they didn't have a kinko, so he hired the guy who copied the book, Divan, 1 year. He paid him very dearly, 1,000 gold pieces.
Wow. And this Divan that he brought was... Yes. One of the original sources?
Yes. The original divan went up to Central Asia.
Okay.
But the copy of the divan, the original divan, after governor dead, was given to Konya convent and has been kept there all these years. Up till now, and it's in the main exhibit hall. Have you been in Konya?
I have not been.
All right. Oh, you should. You should.
Yes. It's a life goal.
It's a pilgrimage. I'll take you, hopefully, if my life, my time hasn't come in yet.
That would be beautiful.
The novice didn't allow to read the D1. D1 is like a minefield. You don't know which one, which step you're going to blow your heart, which step you're going to blow your mind. It was kind of rough for the novice. So they kept him there up till now. That's 1360. Handwritten.
In Farsi?
In Farsi.
Okay.
In Farsi, but there are a lot of Arabic poems. I made a replica out of it. They allow me to take it from glass window, and we did make a copy of it.
And you took photographs of the pages?
Yes.
And translated from those photographs?
Yes.
Wow. The Divan that you translated, I understood that it was from the Turkish that you had translated.
Right, right.
Okay.
Now, Gökhan spent all his life. He was there as a teacher, 1930s, and then he became retired, and they give him a little room, corner, in museum, and he stayed there all his life. He worked and he translated one by one every one of the ghazals and rubais. I translated from his Turkish translation. Everybody tells me, you're Turk, how can you translate Mevlana? You don't know Farsi. I waited for 800 years. None of you guys have done this translation, so I cannot wait any longer. It's more than welcome, anybody who compare, like, this is where I'm finishing the translation of the rubais. Altogether, there is 1,736 rubais in the second volume of Divan. And I put the Persian text, Turkish, German translation, and English translation. And this Divan will be sponsored by a great lady and family in Turkey, and will be in print maybe in next year in April or May.
Wow. So in addition to the 22 volumes of right. what is called Divani Shams, Divani Kabir,
right.
in addition to that, now is coming the Rubaiyat
right.
in
right.
April.
It's about 600 pages with original text. And English text translation, German translation, and Turkish translation.
Wow.
And some on Russian translation.
All in the same book?
All in the same book. It's about 600 pages, a little bigger than ordinary book, a little smaller than Divan, but it will be.
Now, the Divani Kabir are poems of praise and illumination to Shemsi Tabriz.
Yes.
The Rubaiyat, how are they different, or?
Well, there are maybe about 10 Rubais mentions Shemsi by name. But 80%, at least 70%, talks about him. And he put light about the end of chance. He's talking about bloody conflict. And blood and knife and this and that. He denies chance ever died. But regardless of what, I think there's a conspiracy killing the chance, and out of this conspirator, one of at least Mevlana's youngest son, Alaaddin, because he didn't go his funeral. He died before Mevlana died. He didn't go his funeral. I have 150 letters written by him to...
The son?
No, no.
Of Mevlana?
100 letters out of 200 letters, two of them, his son. Some of them is Sultan Mehmet, his older son. And many others, different people. He's trying to get them a job, or he's trying to cut their taxes. And I'm waiting. I finish all of those. I'll translate them in English.
Wow.
Very important document. It shows the Diwan and Rubais are really arguing. It's not written by Mevlana. It was said by Mevlana, recorded by people around it. It shows that.
Okay.
It shows the spontaneity of every poem was the result of some question or something happened around.
Let me just back up a bit there. The Rubaiyat, some of them are directly addressed to Shems,
yes,
but most of them are referring to Shems in some way.
Yes.
Around the, you mentioned the conspiracy of Shems's murder at the hands of some of Rumi's own, I don't know what to call them, people in his teke that he had. But as to whether that really happened, there's still a question in your mind?
Oh, no. I think so. His youngest son was in love with Shams's wife. Second time when Shams came in, first of all, let me put one thing straight.
Yes.
In the one I mentioned, one verse mentions when I met the Shams, I was 63 years old, he says. Shams was older than that. We're talking about not young or middle-aged persons, but very old two gentlemen.
Okay.
And this puts his birthday a little bit behind the prior of present day's birthday. Would you allow me to take a few moments? You call me back or I'll call you back.
Okay, very good. I will. Let's take 5 minutes and I will give you a call back then.
All right, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
You were speaking of that Mevlana was, a fully mature man.
Yes.
When he met Shems. Yes.
That eliminates some of the bad publicity. West wanted to see East on the garden where young man is in the arm of a middle-aged man.
Yeah.
And the fountains are flowing.
So that's not a possibility then?
That bad image is existent in Konya, in Turkey, everywhere else in the mind. Well, let's talk about love where Manara mentions.
Please.
Sure. This love is not love to any existing human being, man or woman, or love to money, fame, or anything. I think the Plato's dialogue mentioned about love, best way, none of this. And eventually, Plato sums up love and learning. This business is not learning. This business, unlearning. And, you go through fasting, breathing changes, and suffering, mental suffering. You detach from the words, everything what you hang on will dissolve, will cut through, which gives you some pain. If you fond of money, you lose money. If you find a lot of losses, a lot of humiliations, that's part of the game. But you go through with this, you change your perception. So first stage is Fana, F-I, an annihilation and an action.
You're talking about the levels of Fana?
Yeah. Fana, annihilation and action is first stage. It takes about 8 to 12 years, hardest period. And then you will have no time and space limitation. You can be here and there at the same time. And time become not linear, but past, present, and future become same time, on a dime, they call. And all the mental questions are answered. In other words, what is God, what is man, what is life, what is that? You don't have the answer putting in a couple pages or paragraph, but you dissolve the questions. You know this by heart. That's what they call Ledun.
They call it
Ledun.
Ledun.
Ledun size.
Now, you're through, just so I can get a picture, I'm looking at Mr. Shuchud's appendix that you kindly sent.
Yes.
He is listing the four fana.
Yes.
The fana el akam, the fana el sifat, or no, sorry, the fana el afar.
Al-asfat, fana attribute.
Yes.
Annihilation and action, annihilation attribute.
Yes.
Fana sifat, annihilation attribute comes a little after Fenrir. Then you have explosion of love and ecstasy. This is where exactly Maulana was. This love comes from inside out, not outside in. Unless you know the annihilation of attributes, you will never understand love in Maulana. Love in Maulana, love to Shams, love to God, love to beauty, all of the same. This is where people are messing up and finding this love similar to love we experience in life. Also, there is nothing wrong with the love we experience in life. Maulana say, look at the result of this love. How many beautiful children were born? Love any kind is acceptable for Maulana. Except love to self.
Mm-hmm.
Self is the biggest curse. Now we got stuck with the self prey predator mechanism. Everybody feels somebody else is prey. He becomes predator. He takes certain advantage. He realized, how am I going to get something out of it? As long as we stay like that, we'll never end the conflict. Maulana say, be like a mother's baby relation with others.
Mm.
Because mother has no self in this product, baby, right?
Yep.
As dogs and cats, bees and butterflies, every creature as good mother as human mother, right? Even better.
Mm-hmm.
They give their life for this kind of relation. This is where he suggests to end the conflict. You have to get rid of the self, he says. Self, he says, is like a hair on your eye torn in the bottom of your feet. And if you remove them, you're not going to be able to see or go anywhere. Maulana, believe me not, is the last hope for mankind.
Hmm.
If you listen to this, all right. We'll maybe all right for a while. If you don't, we'll be in nuclear winter forever.
And it's this precise fana that you're speaking of attributes.
Attribute. Fana'i attribute. Fana is the annihilation of self.
Mm-hmm.
That's a long, hard, lonely process. You don't need anybody to do that. Hunger, breathlessness is the cheapest thing in the world. And for doing that, you don't need anybody. Nobody will be able to do this for you. We'll talking about a little bit more on the experience in this way. Advise or listen some others' suggestions, experiences. This is secondary. Never replace the fasting and the breathing and suffering. One has to go through that. Unfortunately, most of the mystic way or tarikat are nothing but fellowship. They do listen or read books, and they try to learn without experiencing these stages. And most of the religions are nothing but ceremonies, theaters, have a costume, music, and everything, acting. Very profitable.
Now, the four aspects of annihilation that you are just going through here for us, firstly, what Mr. Shashud is calling a zikr, remembrance, which is the breathing aspect. Secondly, is austerity or the fasting practice. Thirdly, is contrition or suffering, as you say. And fourthly, is the fellowship, the sobet, as it were, keeping company with other people on this path.
No money is exchanged, no benefit has been derived from this fellowship. And no dress codes, no nothing.
Mm-hmm. Can I ask you a bit about one of the stories in the Mathnawi?
Right.
The very first story of the Mathnawi, the story of the king and the handmaiden. Are you familiar with that?
No. I am not familiar anything in Masnavi yet.
Okay.
That will be my next life adventure.
Mm-hmm.
Challenge. I am familiar with everything in Diwan. Diwan is 44,000 verses. Masnavi is 27,000.
Wow.
Masnavi has been written by Mevlana or said by Mevlana, written by Hüsamettin Çelebi. As you remember, Hüsamettin replaced Şams.
Yes.
After Şams' disappearance, there's a period where Selahaddin Zerkub, goldsmith, had stay with the close circle with Mevlana. He was old and died short time later, but Mevlana married his son with his daughter, and that wedding had been subject to a couple odd gazelles in Diwan. And I believe one of them was mentioning where Shams was there. Shams stayed with Malana a little over than 2 years. Came to Konya 1244, 45 maybe, and left or disappeared 47. And if you take his first travel to Damascus, altogether maybe about 2 years, 2 months or so. In test, get it. And that intensity produced devout teacher, blah, blah, as we know, as we are. There's no anybody in the world, east or west, like Mevlana, with the quantity and quality. All the Persian writers before him or after him are like tent were found, put in the garden of Mevlana's palace.
Tents.
Tents. Believe me. Believe me. There is nobody in west or east as he is. He takes you from yourself to beyond yourself. That's the importance of Mevlana. He gets you out of yourself.
Yes.
He shows the route very, very beautifully, elegantly, and clearly. Unless you do that, you're caged in your jail, your dungeon. Hello?
Hello.
Yes, we were disconnected.
Yeah. I was just saying how much of an influence Mevlana's poetry has had on me. And I wanted to just go back a bit because you mentioned Husamuddin. Yes, that during the recitation of the Mathnawi, it is said that Mevlana would be turning and that Husamuddin would be sitting on the side and taking down the verses.
Well, I don't know about turning, but I do believe first suggestion came from Husamuddin. He says, our people around us are telling me they read Sinai, Habers. Why don't you have some of those things been put in the book? He says, Mevlana say, answer him, that's what I thought. And last night I put down 18 verses. If you allow me to recite, and if you write down this, we'll have a new book. 18 verses came from his turban. Always consider 18 as a lucky number in Maldives. And earth 18 verses his handwriting. Rest of them are Husamuddin. They recite during the day, but they correct it at night. There's a period that started in 1265 or so. End up in a couple years before Mevlana's death. During that process, Husamuddin's wife got sick. They give an interval, about a year or so. And this is why Mesnevi But the one was continued while he was reciting the messenger, and also did say gazelles and revised quatrains as well.
So all at the same time as he was working on the Masnavi, also yes. He was continuing with those other...
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Unfortunately, Diwan anthology means Diwan as an anthology has classic form. They divide older poems on regarding the meters. Meters are kind of musical tunes on Arabic and Persian poetry. Failatun, failun, mefailun, mefailun, mefailun. Kind of 23 of them.
Hmm.
And they divide them, those poetry poems, in the, according to their meters, and then they subgroup them on the last word of the rhyme, last alphabet of the rhyme. A, B, C, H, goes on like that. It's not chronologically done, so we don't know which poem was said before, which one was said later on. Except in Diwan, we know quite a bit about life in Konya in the 13th century, where Mongols came in, everybody loaded their belongings to mules and going to Kayseri, and there are earthquakes, there are unjust qadis, judges, and there are jalad, the one professionally kills people wandering around the street. There, everything in 13th century Konya is right there. Hmm. There are some poems were read and recited in hammam, Turkish bath.
Yep.
He liked it there to stay a couple days, as a matter of fact.
Is that right? In the hammam?
Yes. His son went and begged him to get out. All those interesting things in the Diwan. If you read word by word, that's what I did.
Okay.
Thank God. Thank God. What else I should be doing at this moment in my life? Hmm. If I didn't have to do this, I would commit suicide.
Well,
because you run out of the thing to do in life. You become vegetable.
Yeah.
You eat, you whatever.
Yeah.
Basic function.
Well, you wouldn't be out. You wouldn't be out golfing or anything like that.
Yeah. No. Your mind is busy. You've been through with everything. You realize how life is nothing but a dream. Somebody else lived a dream 50, 60 years ago. It wasn't you.
Hmm.
And the thing becomes nuisance.
Yeah.
Really. This, I am very happy to pursue this road. I have projects, you wouldn't believe it, will carry me to another life or another life. I hate to come back again because it's a very, very shitty word, as a matter of fact.
You wrote this wonderful book, The Tales of a Modern Sufi.
Right, right, right.
And you're bringing some of these perceptions that you just shared here to the printed page. Can you tell us a bit about that book? And I mean, the story that that I read a couple of times, I can't find it right now, I'm looking through it, is the one where he meets on the shore.
Right.
He goes down to the shore, and there's a man on a black horse who comes to him and says, well, you're on my land.
Right.
And the fellow in the story says, well, really, I'm on the shore. It's neither land nor ocean.
Right. This is a basic concept of defining this, describing the man. Man is not object. Man is a shore concept. Man is a concept, not an object. It's the touching point of true unknown, body and soul. We have no idea, neither body nor soul. But touching point of true unknown makes the perception, consciousness. This is what I try to say. You cannot carry 1 millimeter shore from one side to other. You carry the water or sand. Or horizon is the same thing.
Okay.
Is a concept. Man is a concept. But everybody thinks is the object. And we deal like an object, but it's a non-existing thing. Please, leave me alone. Let's get together again. Where are you living?
Where am I living?
Yes.
In this, I live in Niagara region. You know, have you heard of the Niagara Falls in Canada?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I have been there. A lot of times. In Canadian set, in American set. Buffalo?
Yes.
Or Ontario set?
Yes. So I'm living about 20 minutes away from the falls in this area where we grow lots of wine here in Canada.
Oh, yeah. You have wine after the snow and frozen freeze came.
That's,
you picked them up?
That's right, the ice wine.
Yes.
The
I understood that from my neighbor in the Mesa meeting. The publisher came from Buffalo, New York.
Mm-hmm.
Were telling me about that kind of wine. I drink last 40 years half bottle of wine. If you talk about wine in Marana, it's not divine wine, also divine wine he says he drinks, but the grape wine, he drinks that as well.
Mevlana says that.
Oh, absolutely. I could prove that many poem, many rubais. Yes. He enjoy drinking good wine. I think God created the man and made the woman out of rib cage or ribs. After that, he felt sorry for the man. He created the wine. You can say that too. Wine is a symphony.
Mm-hmm.
If you happen to be in San Francisco, please, let's get together.
Well, that would be wonderful. And thank you so much, really, for making this time and talking with us. I'm hoping to be able to get a nice podcast out of this, and I will let you know when I post it.
All right. It's my pleasure, it's my honor, and let's get together sometime. Or too late.
Drunks, even if there's not much wine, just the smell of it in the air will be enough to give you a shine.
Idiot Players podcast is available for download at idiotplayers.org. Any republication in whole or in part of this podcast must include a pointer back to idiotplayers.org.